along with that page, we represent Wesco. There are two themes in this case. The first is the right and the freedom to contract, especially where you have two parties that are comparable bargaining powers and experiences. We've taken that away from the parties in this case by the decision by the trial court. And as a result, number two is we have a windfall to the seller. We have the seller who sold this business for $3.5 million to Wesco, and just 2 years later was taking that money and looking to get back in to compete against Wesco. We believe that's unfair and unjust. So we're asking this court to do one of two things. Number one is to find that those restrictive covenants of location and time are reasonable and they were necessary, especially in the context of a business transaction. If the court were to find that one or both of those covenants is not reasonable, then we would ask you to empower the trial courts to use another equitable tool known as judicial modification to draft and modify this agreement so that it meets the business expectations of both parties. You were. And I think the difference here is that the case we bring today is between two experienced business people. We're not involved in an employment relationship. We're not involved in a franchise relationship. And we believe the majority rulings in these types of cases where you have parties of equal bargaining power, that judicial modification is appropriate to determine what was the intent and what can we do to fairly treat both these parties. It's not fair that we go and allow one of them to keep $3.5 million and now come back and compete back.
What were the assets being purchased, and was there a payment or would we own it in the covenant not compete with your specific payment allocated to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And so about $2.8 million was allocated to goodwill. $100,000 was allocated to the covenant not to compete. The rest of it was based upon the purchase of a couple airplanes and other equipment. And so here we know that Mr. Peterson had gathered approximately 9 years of goodwill operating this business. And that was the intent, to be able to pay him for his business and that goodwill, as well as keeping him out of that business.
The reasons for the 10-year length of the covenant was that he thought that's the amount of time he needed to recoup his payment to last pass.
Exactly. Two things really there. Number one is that you've got $3.5 million, which is a significant amount of money. And Mr. Briggs testified as president and GM of Wesco that he thought he needed that 10 years to recoup. And certainly you can look at the type of business we have here. Aerial spraying, we know we don't have 12 months a year of revenue coming from that business. So that should probably have six months. So certainly it takes a considerable amount of time to recoup that investment. Mr. Peterson knew that. He was a willing participant in this contract. In fact, there were four things that he gave back and asked for, and he got every one of those. So he wanted to reduce the location from 500 miles to four states. He had some changes with regard to industry standards as it relates to insurance. He also went to his accountant and wanted some of the purchase price allocated to give him some beneficial tax consequences. And he wanted his son employed. So everything he came to us with, he got. If he wanted more things, he could have done that. In fact, he testified that he knew it was 10 years and he didn't have any quibble. He didn't have any objections.
The technical covenants not to compete set forth the amount of the bill. In other words, this is a little bit different case where somebody's working for some company's in the court and they're unable to work anywhere else because the company says you can't do the same thing that wasn't before because those are unreasonable that you couldn't get an employment. This isn't really an employment contract, this is a purchase of business specific allocations of assets to what's being taken.
Absolutely.
typically, we have not reformed a contract in the last 25 years. I know, I am a large county.
Courts for years have used equity to decide certain things. The trial court in this case used equity to say that the covenants were enforceable. We're suggesting that the court can as well use equity to say, all right, there are some terms that may be more reasonable. In fact, the majority of jurisdictions do follow that. Not in terms of what's known as a strict blue pencil, but a liberal blue pencil. To allow the courts to find, is there something that we can do with the restrictions of time and distance to make this fair for both parties? So,
that's something. The acknowledgement that both parties were sophisticated and people weigh against the blue pencil argument is not in favor.
It may, as to the strict blue pencil, where you're simply looking at striking out form in terms of substance. But here, the issue is you have two sophisticated people here. The seller had bought this business 9 or 10 years before, so he certainly knew what he was doing. He'd run the business. So you have two people here who enter into this contract. And the trial court said, well, there are two things we don't think are reasonable. Number one, in terms of the location. Well, in fact, it was Mr. Peterson that asked that that location be reduced from 500 miles to four states. So they negotiated. Why are we taking that away from the two parties? And that's what the trial court did in this case. In part, that's a big part of it. Certainly the knowledge that people had of Mr. Peterson, that he had developed over 9 years period of time, his expertise, all those things went into the decision by Wesco to want to make sure that he wasn't in our area or an area that we wanted to be in, competing with us. Absolutely. In aerial spraying, you can probably foresee that maybe you have a contact with a customer maybe once a year. And maybe that contact's only by telephone and then the plane flies over their field. So there's not much of an ability in a short period of time to develop goodwill in that business. And I think that's why Wesco wanted Mr. Peterson out of that area. So he could not come back to his customer.
If we were to use a blue pencil, what specifically you are in
the Well, first of all, I want to make sure I'm clear that I don't think today this court needs to do anything in the areas of employment law or franchise law. There are special protections that employees need in that type of situation. That's not this case, and I don't think that's today. That's for a different day. We believe that what trial courts need to do is to take a look not only at the document but also the testimony and determine if there is something that can be done to find the intent of the parties. And here the trial court did that because in his opinion he talked about the fact that Mr. Peterson's area was about 150 miles. So it would have been reasonable and equitable for the trial court to say, okay, I'm going to take that location from four states and we're going to reduce it down to 150 miles because that does a couple of things. That still leaves Mr. Peterson with a $3.5 million. But over here, it allows Wesco to have what they bargained for, and that is Mr. Peterson not competing with them in this area. Pardon me? We believe that the 10 years was reasonable and should not be reduced. Because this isn't like the Presto X case where you've got a purchase price of about $45,000. This is $3.5 million, and the only testimony we have that was not controversial was from Mr. Briggs indicating that he thought he needed that 10 years to recoup. There was no testimony from Mr. Peterson believing that he thought that that was unreasonable. In fact, his decision 2 years after the fact to jump into that would indicate that time wasn't important. Either he was always going to do that or he did that for some other reason. The 10 years we believe is reasonable and that Wesco has the right to have some time period to recoup its investment. So Your Honor, back to your question, we believe that certainly that trial courts cannot expand upon an agreement, but certainly given the testimony, they should have the ability and the power to look at what is reasonable and what satisfies the business expectations of both parties. Hear this.
This just leaves the weekend so that you can demand it back to the trial court.
We would think that the best approach would be to remand. Certainly, I'd love for you to use the blue pencil and find that those restrictions were reasonable. But in terms of going forward in business relationships like this one for the future, I believe that you can also remand to the trial court with the instructions that this court follows, a liberal or a modified judicial modification agreement, so that trial courts can structure and find in equity something that gives both parties what they bargained for. We don't have that here. If we don't do that, we're going to allow somebody to walk out with $3.5 million and turn right around and compete. That's not fair, and that's not what the parties intended.
Counsel, before you sit down, in this case, the burden of proof was sort of upended from what had usually received, because it was last pass who filed that lawsuit seeking to find the agreement unenforceable. Is that significant?
It is. We believe that they filed the action that meant that they had the burden of proof, and there was no evidence that they produced that talked about, for example, the time period, the unreasonableness of that time period. And so when Mr. Briggs testified, he testified as to why he needed that period to recoup his investment. So we believe that the plaintiff, Mr. Peterson, did not satisfy his burden of proof in showing that that was unreasonable. As a result, we believe that the 10 years is reasonable and should stay that. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nedek, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Gary Nedved, and I represent the plaintiffs' appellees in this court. First of all, I'd like to address the case of Lucas Peterson, who was a W-2 employee of LastPass, had no ownership in the corporation, and was not a signatory to the purchase agreement. On February 11th of this year, the defendant sought and obtained an order from the district court continuing the injunction against Lucas Peterson that was originally granted in April of 2014 before I got into the case, and that injunction remains in full force in effect and prevents Lucas from working in the four-state area of Colorado, Wyoming, South Dakota, and Nebraska.
It was bonded.
It's bonded.
It's bonded.
Yes.
It's bonded.
When the defendant filed its brief in this court, the defendant abandoned its claim that the covenant not to compete was binding on Lucas Peterson. So the case obviously has to be remanded to the district court with instructions to the district court to quash the injunction against Lucas Peterson, who was not an owner, and to allow Lucas a hearing on his motion that's currently pending when this appeal was filed for attorney fees and damages as a result of the improper entry of the injunction that the defendant requested. It is. There's no question about that. And this court has decided a number of cases. The sale of a business in the context of and the court has set forth very straightforward rules for determining whether the geographic location and the duration of the agreement are necessary and reasonable. What the court has said in those types of cases is for the scope of the covenant and the duration of the covenant to be fair and reasonable, it must be no greater than reasonable to protect the buyer in what the buyer purchased, which is the assets, the customer base, and the goodwill.
Then the seller declared that a guest was a smaller, than a guest was, only the price setting on a four store. That he could not compete in on that kind of.
That's correct. In every covenant match compete case that's ever come before this court, parties have obviously agreed on the scope and the duration of the covenant, but that has not prevented this court from striking down lots of covenants that are bizarre.
It's this case different than typical employment case, where in this case, the fixed assets of business is minimal compared to what it's paid for the customer list. And his non-compete agreement was about $200 million.
Well, Judge, I don't think it makes any difference whether they paid $300,000 or $3 million, because the issue, the legal issue before the court,
being paid directly for that, and that part of the agreement, in the size of the sum, is that something that should be enforced?
This court has never held that a purchase price is a criterion that might be taken into account in determining
when you have sizable amounts of goodwill that is required to be being paid for these covenants. How can you say that these terms of the agreement between the two parties for which they're being paid is unreasonable?
Well, then what this court has held in numerous cases, including the Fresco X
case, in these cases, and I've written opinions on these cases. But I know what you stated, was it's greater than reasonable. We don't change the covenant here, that's war.
That's right. So this court is not in the business of rewriting the contract.
Your Honor, all of our customers
we're within 150-mile radius of the Alliance Airport. And in fact, it's undisputed that 90 to 95. Correct. You have distance and fuel limitations. They can only fly 2.5, 3 hours. And the undisputed testimony was that the only profitable trips were within 80 miles. The only reason they go out beyond 80 miles is to accommodate a good customer. So it's really an 80-mile for a possible
trigger. And if he can't do this, he's beyond 80 miles.
Well, we can't go to Broken Bow. We can't go to Nebraska City. We can't go to Norfolk.
$2.8 million. Not.
But why should we not be permitted to go and continue business in a place where neither the defendant nor we knew anybody or had any customer?
Mr. Mendon, what's the valuation of this place on the bottom?
Well, this court has never held, and I don't know why it would make a difference what the number is for the purchase. I mean, I don't know whether the defendant got a good deal, a bad deal, or a fair deal. They may have gotten a good deal. There's just no evidence in the record. None whatsoever.
Covenants are unenforced. Your client can compete the same as if he did 2 years ago with all the customers that he has in that area.
Well, they've had 6 years. Six flying seasons. That's keeping my people out of business. Well, they haven't been out of luck for 6 years. They've got six out of the 10 years they want. Well, they did. Well, that the issue before the court is whether the scope and duration of the covenant is reasonable. Not the amount of money. I mean, if this court gets into saying, well, now we're going to demand evidence of whether
we're not going to be needed for what we've done for the last 25 years.
Well, that's what I'm, of course, asking the court to do, because it's pretty simple and straightforward. If you apply existing laws,
whether you call somebody calling $2.8 million for
But Judge, you don't know whether that was a good deal or a bad deal for us. It may have been a good deal. But you don't know.
But you don't know.
And it isn't in the record. And are we now going to have the parties come in these types of cases and prove whether it's a good deal, a bad deal, or a fair deal?
Is there any significance to the apparent fact that this is the geographical area that you are applying for bargaining?
My client is a high school graduate that flies airplanes that was not represented. Okay. He should have had a lawyer. He should have had a lawyer. There's just no question about that. The defendant's lawyer drafted and prepared this document knowing what well-established Nebraska law was. Okay. My guy got taken advantage of. Because, yeah, he would like to go out and do so. You know what? He would want to sit around. He's allowed to take that money and go out. Maybe go to Broken Bow. Maybe go to Nebraska City. Maybe go up into South Dakota where he had no customers. Or go into Wyoming where he had no customers. And continue on in business. That's the way the world works. And he should not be prohibited from doing that because of an agreement that this court has held on similar facts many times to be overreaching in terms of the geographic location and the duration. There's just no evidence, as the trial court found, to support either one.
The proceeding you brought was more on equity?
Yes, it was a declaratory judgment act. I do agree that it's an equity. And they filed a counterclaim and filed an injunction, which they received immediately against us. And to answer the judge's question over here, this court, in considering a covenant not to compete, has never really focused on the burden of proof. What this court has said time and time again is that the buyer must show that the restraint is reasonable in geographic location and in duration. Because it's the buyer that has to show the restraint is necessary to protect what it purchased. The goodwill, the clients, and the assets of the business being purchased. That is what the defendant must show. That's what they failed to show here. And so we ask that the case be remanded with directions to quash the injunction and to allow our motion for attorney fees and damages to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for
rebuttal? He is over.
We will then go on to the next case. Next case is Mock versus Neumeister. That is correct.